a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It is a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, hey,
hey,
hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah. Hey.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Liz Hamilton joining us this morning as well. And we wanted to start out the hour and talk about dividing perennials because, yes, there is sunshine today and it'll soon be time to do that. And, Ton, it's going to happen pretty quickly here.
It is. We're moving from those winter, the low 40s to the mid 50s in just a few days. And so a lot of perennials are going to start breaking dormancy soon. And so we do need to get on dividing as soon as that snow is melted off.
All right, Liz. So how do we best do this?
All right. So it's worth noting that spring is the best time for the majority of perennials that you're dividing. And also that some perennials shouldn't be divided. And so we'll talk a little bit about that too. But the main way that I do it, maybe Ton has a different way to do it. I think everybody has a preferred method, but I prefer to dig the, whatever it is that I'm dividing. So let's say hosta. I like to dig the entire plant up into a ball and find a good division point. So what that means is I'm looking for maybe a natural break in the root ball where I'm not going to cut directly through an eye, which is a sprouting area or something like that. And then I'll viciously use my shovel to start in that area and then just chop it in half. And the reason I like to pull the whole plant out of the ground when I do that is so I can kind of visually see where the good place is that I think would fit. And then also it lets me rearrange what's left. Like if I'm going to keep it in that plant in that spot, it lets me rearrange it when I put it back into the ground. So it goes in a way that I think meshes really well back with the bed. And then if I'm going to move it, then I've already got everything out of the ground and I'm ready to go. And then there's a place for something new there. And so that's how I do it. I've seen people where they put two tine forks, plant forks down in there, and then they'll use the forks to split the whole plant apart and then pry the forks aside in Monty Don style from England. And that's another good way to do it. I've also seen people just pick up the whole root ball and smash it on the ground and
let it fall apart.
Yeah, and it's also not a recommended method for certain plants that are really delicate, but some things can totally handle that. So there's no super set way to do it. So certain plants that I wouldn't divide, moving on to that section, would be plants that have a clear rosette. So something like lupine, where it's all one growth point and the plant's not splitting itself out into smaller plants, that would be not something you could divide. Or something that has a woody base like lavender or sage, you can't stick a shovel in there and hack at that woody base. You'll wreck the center of the plant and it will never recover from something like that. And then there are some plants that you, since we're talking about this time of year, that ideally are moved in the fall and not moved in the spring. So almost 90% you could move in the spring. But plants with fleshy, large fleshy roots do better with a fall transplant. So when they're headed into or already just barely going dormant in the fall. And then because they don't always pop out of dormancy in the spring if you move them in the spring. And so, Maria, I know you're getting ready to move some peonies.
Too many.
So peonies really do not like a spring transplant. And so just keeping them really well watered. And they have those great big huge roots. So trying to get all of the root ball that you possibly can on that and not leaving any little feelers out and moving your giant piece of
Yeah, Ton peony. Said just make sure you do it before it breaks dormancy. Right, Ton?
Yeah. And it's one of those, going back to that rule, if it blooms in the spring, divide it in the fall. If it blooms fall, divide it in the spring. And so those peonies are always just a little more touchy anyway. But, you know, you can do it. It's just that you have to be very careful.
You know, it's one of my favorite plants, right, Tom?
You get three or four, at least three or four of those eyes or those nodes into the new clump. And you just have as much of the root ball as you can.
I will do my best. That's all I can say. And if not, I will be buying a new plant, right?
At least there's lots of varieties out there.
That's right.
It's always fun to try something new if you don't succeed.
The patio is just, I need to move the plant. So, okay. Anything else about transplanting?
I mean, watering them in. So once you get them into their new location, even if the ground is wet, you want to water them in so that they're not having any air bubbles or weird pockets around their roots, and the roots have really good contact with their new location when you're settling them into a new spot. And then whatever you've divided up, if you left it, then make sure you backfill that really good. And then I always like to fertilize at the same time.
I was going to say, root starter, fertilizer, what are we talking about?
Yeah, here? I just do a lightly basic perennial fertilizer. I don't use root starter just because I never have it on hand, but
that's true.
Well, and it's basically worthless stuff with a little fertilizer.
Yeah,
stick with the fertilizer. Okay, yeah. Now we know how you feel about root starter.
I really like the granular fertilizers because then they're pelleted and you have a slow release, so you're not just dousing your plant with a really high dose of something, and it can break down over time.
Something like Osmocote or something like that.
Yeah, uh-huh, or Osmocote or Floracote, any of those are really good, or a tree and shrub fertilizer if you have something with woody stems. You're covered for a really long period of time and the plants are happy.
So before we go to break, could you quickly cover dividing perennial grasses?
Well, so perennial grasses, most of them you can also do in the spring. A couple few don't like a spring move and prefer the fall as well, but for the most part, spring move is right. And the only ones that you would look at in the fall are ones that are cold sensitive. So like pampas grass and not Ravinia, like the actual Corticillaria pampas grass that is marginally hardy in our area. Pampas is the common name for two different grasses that are not related to each other, just for viewers and or listeners, I guess. And so those what you would want to divide in the fall and not in the spring. But in the spring, there's not a normal break that you would see like on something like a hosta or an echinacea, for example. And so I don't know how you do it, but I just put my shovel into the center of it and dig as well as I can and try to get as much root. And
it's kind of an ugly
process as you hack at it, especially if you've got something really deep rooted like a miscanthus grass. They are so deep and they're so hard to get out. But yeah, it's generally not pretty. I've also even used on really large clumps, a reciprocating saw.
Yes. Just going to say that, dig out the clump and use a like a sawzall with a long pruning blade on it that you're willing to sacrifice and just saw that thing up into three or four or five chunks and make sure you get roots on every chunk and replant every one of them.
Yep, that's what I've done. And I have if people are unaware, there is a pruning specific blade for reciprocating saws. I think Diablo makes them. And you can pick those up at any of your big box stores. And they're super long and they're made for like wet wood or wet jobs like that. So they don't tear it up too bad, but that's a really useful tool to have.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with your questions. Jim, you are up next on the line. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Thank you for spending this beautiful Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria, Ton, and Liz with you this morning taking your questions. Next listener has texted their question, and they would like to know, when is a good time to treat an autumn blaze maple, Ton, for iron chlorosis?
That would be early spring, as soon as the snow melts off. The reason for that is that when the roots absorb iron through the soil, about 90% of it is up taken up in before the tree leaves out. So as soon as that snow melts off, I would get at least a pound, depending on the size of it, and it'll tell you how much to apply according to the trunk width. And instead of drilling holes in the lawn, Mike Coons, our emeritus urban forester, recommended just mixing it up in 5-gallon buckets and drenching under the canopy of the tree, and then just getting a hose, if your irrigation's not on yet, just take it off of your house and watering that area for 15 or 20 minutes just to flush that iron into the soil.
All right, let's go to back to our phone lines. Jim is on the line in Sandy. Good morning, Jim. What is your question?
I'm interested in a dinner plate hibiscus, something besides red or white or pink. And I see online, I've even ordered seeds from this USA Garden Center two times of various seeds. Not one of them, only one of them was hibiscus, but none of their seeds that I have purchased have ever germinated. So I'm wondering, is there anybody here in Utah that specializes in the dinner plate hibiscus, particularly the, I'm going to say, the odd colors?
Well, I don't know of anybody. You could look at Perennial Favorites website. They distribute perennials to a lot of local garden centers. You can't just walk in there and purchase, but they will list a number of kinds of hibiscus. Then you could call them and see approximately when and where they're going to be distributed to. But I, territorial seed or something. Liz, do you have any suggestions?
So a couple of the breeders just came out with like some lavender colors. I think some lavender dinner plate hibiscus. And let me see if I can look that up.
Lavender. You may have to veer toward ordering live plants because a lot of the newer, while Liz is looking this up, a lot of the newer dinner plate hibiscus are hybrids between sometimes 3 and 4 different species of hibiscus to get some of these newer leaf colors, like the dark red ones or the more compact. And so it may be that the seed isn't available because they have to be propagated from root divisions.
Yeah, and the one I kind of just popped up, I think there's 2 others out there called, it's called Fantasia, but honestly, the purple label is a little loose on that. It looks very pink to me in pictures, but that's the closest. If someone is marketing to you like bright yellows or oranges for hardy hibiscus, there's a good chance it's false marketing and it might be a scam. Particularly,
are there seed companies that y'all know of that you would recommend we try to stay away from, because they really are not honest in their dealings.
Well, rather than staying away from stuff, I think so there's some general rules, like don't buy, and this isn't a hard and fast rule either, but I would say don't buy your seed off Amazon. That's not a place to buy live plants. And then don't buy, and if you look up a seed dealer and they have an online Amazon store, it's a pretty good indication that it may be a scam. There are some reliable ones out there, but do your research on that. I think rather than trying to stay away from certain seed companies, trying to find really good, reputable seed companies like Johnny Selected Seed or Harris Seeds, and those types of places that have really good reviews and have been seed stores for a couple hundred years, things like that. And
if you're looking for oddball stuff, Wayside Gardens might be someplace you could look.
Mm-hmm. And then also just noting that if the color seems too good to be true, it may not be real. You may have seen seed advertisements for rainbow strawberries or neon purple tomatoes and things like that. And if you peruse a website and you're looking at something that seems unusual that no one else is offering, keep looking at that website. And when you start to make connections for things that don't look real, that would be an indicator that it's not, that it's a scam site.
Thank you for having the greatest radio show in existence.
Thank you.
I will say, Liz, I've had some adventures on Amazon ordering things, and it always is a crapshoot. I try to look for places that have a lot of good reviews. For example, I have ordered peanut seeds off of Amazon for 2 or 3 years running, and 2 of the 3 years, the peanut seed came straight from China in sealed foil, and then inside they were even sealed again. Everything in the packaging was in Chinese, and I had to use my Google Translate to even see what it said. They did pop up as peanuts, and I wanted a short season runner, and they weren't that. At least they were peanuts. But sometimes if you are a little adventurous, you're not going to get what you expect sometimes. But if they have a lot of good reviews, you know, I'm talking in the hundreds to thousands, then you might be okay. But Amazon is like the Wild West.
It's dicey for sure. I've actually ordered some weird stuff off Amazon too, knowing better and just like wondering if it would turn out. And I've gotten real actual seed that sprouted, but I know if I'm paying more than a couple bucks for it, there's a real good chance it's not going to work.
Yeah, they have some great succulent starts though, but you have to look at the company. It's not about Amazon. It's looking at the company that's providing the plants.
Yes.
Research the company, and then you should be okay.
There's also
like
people on eBay. That's another real sketchy one. But I've had really good luck on Etsy. People open their own plant shops on Etsy. I've ordered some really unusual orchids on Etsy and had them come beautifully packed. I mean, just beautiful.
All right.
Whole plants. And so Etsy, I've had some really good luck on. Although eBay and Amazon are always could be a real mess.
Do your research. Yeah. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call 801-575-8255. Text us 57500.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.